Yes, hello out there, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcast. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy Flynn McClain. And Flynn, I am flying high today. Last night at the Forum, LA Night 1, Bruce really did turn back the hands of time. We saw something I never thought I'd see again. I'm really quite astonished.
So you got your Bruce mojo back. Is that what you're saying?
100%. And we're going to talk extensively, I'm sure, about last night. But should we go back to where we last left off in the previous episode?
I believe we should. And that would put us back in Brooklyn, of all places. After he played San Diego, he flew back to the East Coast and he joined Zach Bryan for two songs. And I think the most amazing thing about this is that he was supposed to be in San Francisco 24 hours later for a show. And we were wondering if he had the energy to pull it off. And I guess he showed us he showed us what kind of energy he had.
Yeah, this is pretty incredible. Now, full disclosure, you and I and many other people were like, what is going on here? Because of last year, the shows were tightly packed together. We know that he wasn't feeling well. I think that led to a lot of issues, as we know. And why would he fly to the East Coast to play a guest spot when he's got a show the next night? But look, he's fully back. And we heard that from the people who were in San Francisco night one, because that was the latest in a series of outstanding shows that have kicked off the 2024 tour.
I suspect that he really had something going on more than just, say, the last couple of months of the tour last year. I have to think that whatever was going on with him dates back to much earlier in the tour, even if maybe even pre-tour, because the way he has come out this year is just, it's mind-blowing. We talked about it before, about the shows in Vegas and then San Diego, and then he kept it going into San Francisco. And I gotta say, he opened the show, that first show on March 28th, with Something in the Night. Now, on paper, that doesn't really work, but apparently, according to one of our Patreon subs, Doug, the crowd was into it, and they got it going from that get-go.
Yeah, people were very, very excited about that show. I think he went to another level in San Diego, as we talked about in the last episode, and remarkably, he seems to be keeping it up now. The reports from night one in San Francisco were very ecstatic, and it was a very interesting set list. As you noted, Something in the Night kicked things off. And you also had Racing in the Street in the show, Atlantic City, Death to My Hometown. There was variety. He also had spontaneity. As you used the word trajectory in the last episode, this just continued it upwards.
Oh, it sure did. I guess five songs from Darkness doesn't hurt. And I think, as we talked about in the previous episode, we both like it when a song other than Born to Run opens the encores. And actually, the last three shows, he's done that. But he's used the same song, Land of Hope and Dreams. Now, that, of course, is one of his best songs over the last 25 years, almost
for
exactly
sure.
25 years. And I think it works really well. It's not the 99-2000 version, but it works really well, in my opinion.
Yes, it definitely gives the encores a spark at the start. Now, he had done the Detroit medley, which worked really well in San Diego on at least one of the set lists. He had Seven Nights to Rock. But because Land of Hope and Dreams is from the reunion era, I think that it really works well for me. And I was very happy to see it there. Now, I hope he doesn't fall into a trap. It doesn't necessarily need to be there every night, because obviously we've gone pretty much the entire tour without it being played, or just a handful of times previous. So I'd like to see him continue to mix up that slot, but it's a burst of energy to kick off the encores.
Oh, I totally agree. And I agree on the fact that it may not need to be done every single night, but to be rotated with a few others. And just, as I said, it just adds a kind of a bit of a nice explosive start other than Born to Run to get the encores going. Now, going back to the opening of Something in the Night, it's kind of interesting that it's the first time it's opened a show since 1977. So that really was out of the blue.
It was. And he now has opened, I think we're up to five straight shows with different songs. Yes, Vegas opened with Roll of the Dice, of course, then Lonesome Day, Something Tonight, Light of Day, and last night, Boom Boom, which, of course, we're going to get to. This is something that I really enjoy. And as we know, he had done this in 2008, where he, I think, went 15 or 16 shows in a row, something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. And I like having a wild card in the opening slot. It really adds some anticipation to everybody, not just people in the arena, but also to those of us watching on streams or just set list watching. And I remember back on the 2003 tour, I felt like you never know what he was going to open with. He opened with Roulette one night and Cynthia and From Small Things. So I really like the way that's going right now.
Now we move on to San Francisco Night 2, which opened with Light of Day, another distinct song, and a tour premiere. Now, one of the things I did pick up with the Land of Hope and Dreams and the Light of Day, it did seem to me like he is focusing on the songs that have been played, not necessarily recently, but were big building blocks of the reunion era. And of course, Land of Hope and Dreams and Light of Day were two of the cornerstones of the reunion tour.
Yeah, they were done every single night of that tour. So it's not exactly envelope pushing, but it is different for this tour. And those are songs that I would love to see. Now, the thing that really struck me about Light of Day is that the horns were arranged and were very prominent and very similar to how they were on the Tunnel of Love tour. And so that gave me a little extra jolt of energy while watching it, because I feel like on many songs over the years that he did in 88 and then he did later, say, in 2012 or so, I'm thinking most likely of Adam Raised a Cain and Glory Days, where the horns, they were so prominent back in 88. They had such a huge part of the song's arrangements, and then he didn't have them, say, in 2012. And I really miss it, and I'm glad that he did it, at least for Light of Day, and I hope he does it some more.
And the horns are being utilized extremely well so far in this couple of weeks of touring. Light of Day, as you mentioned, they sound great on My City of Ruins, of course. Spirit in the Night, Night Shift, both the horns and the vocals, I think, sound great. So the band is really cooking right now. And the second night in San Francisco, you had Darkness in there. You had Hungry Heart was in there again. And I don't know if this show, set list wise, was as interesting as the first show, but it seemed like people were pretty happy with it.
That's what it sounded like. And you also should mention Darlington County was in there. He did City of Ruins, which he did not do the first night in San Francisco. So there were seven changes from night one to night two. So we're not pushing the envelope. We're not really reaching too deep here. But they are changes, and that's a positive, especially for people who are going to two nights. It's in the same city. It's not like the three different songs we saw at UBS in Belmont last year.
100% correct. And one of the things that has occurred, it almost seems to me, although he's playing new markets for this tour, it seems like he's making an effort now. Kitty's Back has not been played at all. Johnny 99, East Street Shuffle. Those were the songs that we had talked about a lot last year that I think were, even though people want to see Kitty's Back, I think having it played every night took some of the special feeling about it away. And it just didn't seem to provide the kind of spark. Now, you and I suspected, and I think a lot of other people suspected, that those songs were in part being used for Bruce to have a chance to rest, and he certainly does not have anywhere near that type of resting space in the current show, but he seems to feel great, and I guess he just doesn't need it.
Yeah, I just don't think he needs it this year, and I believe I said this before, that I felt like those songs, Kitty's Back, East Street Shuffle, and Johnny 99, they lost the momentum, because up to that point, I felt like it was boom, 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 so to speak, of each song, one into another, and then you hit Kitty's Back, and then you hit the bridge and the instrumental, the solos, and I just feel like it lost a lot of the energy that was going on there. So I am not disappointed at all that those are gone.
One of the things is he must concur with that, because the songs are gone. So
thank you,
know,
Bruce.
it's like, don't play that song, which we talked about in the last episode, and it's now gone. not really rocket science. Now, in the audience, I think the feel must be different than when you're on stage in front of 18,000 people. But it was pretty clear to me, having seen Don't Play That Song the two times in Vegas and in San Diego, while the performance was excellent, it wasn't connecting. And if something's not connecting, that's why he's a consummate performer. He doesn't continue to force it down people's throats. He knows what's working. And right now, he's really on top of it.
I'm wondering if Night Shift is, if he feels that's still connecting with the crowd. And I guess it's a little different because it's a more mellow song. So that is kind of a breather for basically everyone. And how was it, the show you saw last night in LA?
Well, before we get to last night, which I am chomping at the bit to do, the San Francisco Night 2 was on Sunday, March 31st. I do want to mention that night, Bruce also made a very, very talked about, hilarious appearance on one of my favorite all-time TV shows, Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he coined a term that I really can't stop using, floor fucker.
Okay, well, I hope you're not a floor fucker, Hal.
Well, we're not going to get into that.
Hey, that's where the passion is. And
he did not seem to be approving of the floor fuckers.
You know, I always got to feel sorry for the person on the bottom. They're on
all the floor. Right. We're way off here.
You get Carper Burns, and as the Bare Naked Ladies talked about 25 years ago.
But in all seriousness, a phenomenal job by Bruce on Curb. If people don't know, that show is pretty much improvised, and they did say that line was Bruce's. What they do is they give everyone an outline that they want to hit points at a specific scene, and then they let them get there on their own. And he was pretty damn funny. And then the episode wound up with him at home sick because Larry gave him COVID. If you haven't seen it, watch it, because even if you're not a fan of Curb, if you're a Springsteen fan, this is pretty essential.
Yeah, it is. I've never seen more than 5 minutes of Curb ever. And I watched the clips that were available online. And yeah, I burst out laughing a couple of times, especially the scene where Bruce has COVID. He's kind of suffering from it. And somehow Larry and this masseuse or something kind of get back to his back door and bug him. And he's like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, we also have to mention the portrayal of the Springsteen fans in front of the house holding vigil for Bruce when he has COVID. Very, very funny stuff. Of course, everything that Curb does is pretty exaggerated. And we can confirm that was definitely exaggerated, because I don't think neither Flynn nor I or many of the people we know would be outside Bruce's house holding a vigil.
No, we're big fans. I'm not sure I would do that, or I definitely would not do that. So,
we would keep him in our thoughts if he was sick, as we did last year, but no vigils.
None at all. Well, let's move on to last night, Hal, and so you can go nuts here.
I don't even know what to say about last night, because it was so improbable. I mean, this man is going to be 75 years old in September. The shows have been impressive. I mean, if you heard us talk about San Diego the last time, that was a 2-hour and 45-minute tour de force. And it boggles the mind that last night's show went on for 3 hours and 20 minutes. I don't know where he got the energy, and it seemed to build as the night went on. To describe the night, really, for me, it just in the wonder of what I was seeing, at the end of 10th Avenue, I really thought he would conclude the song and go on to I'll See You in My Dreams as his the norm, even though he did do Twist and Shout San Francisco. This show was already over 3 hours last night. I think it was about 3 hours and 8 minutes when 10th Avenue was wrapping up. And he called for a guitar from Kevin. And I was standing with a group of people, and I went, he's calling for a guitar. What the fuck is going on here? It felt so much like 20 years ago. I really thought I'd never have this feeling again of just this wild, reckless abandon, not criticizing anything that we've seen. But at a certain point, you do think that a man who's now going to be 75 years old is going to have to slow down. And at least for last night, somehow he just had that spark that is what makes him him. And he's had it on the other nights, but last night really went to a level certainly I haven't seen since I left Australia in 2017. And the consensus was, I mean, it was by far the best show they played in a long time. So it was really a remarkable evening.
Well, it was a 32-song set, which really wasn't that much longer. I guess normally it's about 29 songs.
27, though, only in San Diego.
All right. Well, see, there you go. So how did he get an extra 35, 45 minutes out of the set list? There wasn't a lot of bloat, was there?
No. Well, although I will say he was very, very fired up and songs seemed to go on. They had a couple of problems with the endings of a couple of songs because I think he was meaning to extend them, the band. It was one of those loose shows. You know how we always talk about that certain shows are looser and other shows have this sort of tight focus? That was San Diego. San Diego had a tight focus. The performance was dead on. Last night was much more freewheeling, and that led to a few flubs, but in the best way. Like, we're just going wild here tonight, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And that's basically where we were. And, you know, they had done a long sound check. That's the other incredible thing. The sound check was over an hour. So last night they did a sound check for an hour plus, and then they played for 3 hours and 20 minutes. It really is astonishing.
I think a big part of last night, what really makes it stand out more than any other show on this entire tour, is that he played a sign request.
He did.
And it wasn't like Glory Days or Sunny Day. It was Jolie Blonde.
Yeah.
That has to be the most obscure song that he has done on this entire tour.
Certainly, we do not know that it was rehearsed. It wasn't in the sound check yesterday. That was truly off the cuff, which I think would be perhaps the only moment of that happening so far on the tour. He's taken sign requests, but, you know, Twist and Shout, I mean, that's obviously, they could play that in their sleep. Even the night that he played If I Was the Priest, we know that they had rehearsed that a number of times. This was really crazy. And the manner in which he did it, I think he was play acting. Two guys had a sheet that they had spray painted their request on. He asked for it to be thrown down. They threw it down. It landed in like the well between the stage and the stand. So they had to get it for him. He got it on stage and then he looked at it. I could see what it said from where I was standing. I think he was play acting, but he started saying, "I can't read it. Do you guys know what song it is?" And then he was asking the band. We were all yelling, "Jolie Blonde, Jolie Blonde." And I was like, "This. I mean, at this point, he almost has to play it." And then he was like, "Okay, Jolie Blonde." And he then remarked that they hadn't played in a while, which was true. The last time was in 2017 in New Zealand. And he also played it twice at two of the shows I was at in Australia. And suddenly out of nowhere, he said, "Okay, we're going to play it." And he counted in and went into the guitar riff and they burst into it. And it was very joyous. The performance, he gave Susie a solo. He gave Charlie on accordion a solo. It was really something. And that was where I texted you, "We have liftoff." And we should go back to the beginning because obviously we've skipped over some major stuff. And the show was already a barn burner by then, which I think he knew. That's what led to the sign. But what magic took place in that building last night.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living. And every week, I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others. Photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici. And I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Mad Magazine.
Advertising mascots.
B-movie posters.
And cartoons.
Oh yeah, can't forget cartoons.
If you get the funky connection that ties these pop culture gems together, you'll dig two designers walk into a bar.
See, we're a couple of creatively curious pals living between the bookends of grand museums and dive bars.
Hey, you know the place, the sweet spot where highbrow and lowbrow become drinking buddies.
So join our barroom chats as we talk influential work and uncover stories of how the familiar became iconic. Think behind the music for the stuff we love.
Check out our website at twodesignerswalkintoabar.com.
And listen wherever you get your podcasts or visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
Well, I think he kind of he gave it a good indicator that was going to happen when he came out and opened with Boom Boom. He's never opened the show with that one, obviously.
No.
It definitely said, tonight's not going to be the same old, same old. Tonight's going to be a little bit different, and it was a lot different, at least through the first half of the show. And I guess it wasn't the sharpest of performances of Boom Boom, but I thought it
was good. I don't think the crowd appreciated it, but I thought it was very good. I was excited to see it. I was surprised by the placement, but I thought it worked well. The crowd, I think they were sort of like not familiar with it, and it took a little while to warm up, but I really enjoyed it. And then when he burst into Lonesome Day, the energy level lifted dramatically, and Prove It All Night, once again, it seems like when he's on, he really knows it. He gets like a smile on his face, because if you watch the Vegas Prove It All Night, he had some issues with the solo there again. That's happened a couple of times where he's a little off key at times. Then in San Diego, that solo that I had tweeted out, which was scorching hot, and last night I think even topped that. The performance was just, it was awesome. And we were flying, and then that went into Trapped, and the crowd just reacted huge to Trapped.
Now, what I felt was interesting was that he soundchecked Trapped. He also soundchecked Tougher and Human Touch with Patty. So I was assuming that they were soundchecking Trapped to make sure Patty had her vocals there, but she was not on stage until her two guest spots. So that was actually kind of a surprise to me.
It was to me too, but it seems like maybe she doesn't want to play the whole show and he's giving her a spotlight. He was so excited that she was there. And we should probably mention Boom Boom clearly had to have been a selection because she was there calling back to the Tunnel Tour. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would agree with that. Yeah. And so he should pull out the title track. But anyway, I want to go back to Boom. I want to go back to Boom Boom for a second. I didn't notice on the video or the stream that I saw, were the horns as into it like they were in 88?
I think so. I'm going to have to hear the tape on that one. I'm going to be honest with you. Pretty much the entire night, I was so out of my mind by the time the show ended. It's all sort of like a blur in the sense like, I can't believe that happened. So I don't really know specifically to answer your question yet. We'll have to hear the tape.
All right. Well, let's see. San Francisco Night 2 came out today, so hopefully we'll have it by Tuesday. And going back to Patty, now her two songs were Tougher Than the Rest and Fire. Tougher seemed to be the normal version that we've known and love over the last 25 years or so, or more than that, going back to the actual Tunnel of Love tour. But Fire was it was kind of the acoustic version, or mostly acoustic version, that they did on Broadway in the summer of 2021.
I would say that's accurate with a twist. It was the very sexy acoustic version that you're citing from Broadway, but the band did come in at the end to great effect.
Well, that's why I said mostly acoustic. So yeah, I saw that the band came in. There are a couple of great videos on Twitter. I don't know if you did one and put it out there, but I saw one tonight that was just amazing. And they were very intimate with it. I mean, they touched noses at one point, and they seemed to be really enjoying playing things up.
He was just so happy. I got to think that had something to do with his energy level last night. He just really excited to see her, I think, on stage next to him, which we know hadn't happened in a while. She'd only made, well, it depends if you want to include the Barcelona appearance where she was on stage very briefly with Michelle Obama and Kate Capshaw. But in terms of her being front and center, she hadn't been on stage in more than a year.
Yeah, when in Barcelona, I believe she just banged on a tambourine and did backing vocals on Glory Days, so she was barely there. But yeah, those two shows really early last year were the only two times that she really had a song.
And the set, he just fed off of that. The crowd really loved her appearance, and The Fire, I think, went over incredibly well. That's the song that hadn't been played. I think someone said it hadn't been played here since 1981, which makes sense. It certainly hasn't been played here in the reunion era. I don't think people were expecting to see that. In fact, of course, they weren't expecting to see it. And it is a song that people really like. And it just, from there, the show, as I said, when we got, it went to Hungry Heart next, and then he took the Joel A. Blown request. And at that point, it had separated itself in terms of shows from, I think, pretty much everything else we've seen, certainly in 2023 and 2024.
Oh, even on paper, it looks that way. And I think he made a pretty interesting set list selection with going from Spirit to No Surrender. He's never done it that late in the set. So he putting it between Spirit and City of Ruins. How did that do with the flow? Did it just people were just into it, I assume, considering what level they were playing at?
And that's the magic of this man, because No Surrender was an audible. I have the set list in front of me. I think it circulated pretty widely.
Yes, I saw it too.
No Surrender was not on the set list. The crowd was flying after Spirit in the Night. And you're right, he did place the song in a part of the show that, at least for the recent past, it hasn't been played, and it just sent the crowd into a frenzy. He knows how to read a crowd. This is not a surprise to you. It's not a surprise to me. It's not a surprise to anyone who sees shows regularly. This is who he is. And just, you know, there are these nights, as we've talked about many times, dating back 50 years in his career, there are these nights where he just, everything connects. He is fully locked in. And we were very, very fortunate to experience that last night.
Well, is this where I throw in the whole 1+1=3 equation? And it seems like last night, 1+1=4. It seemed like you got an extra dose out of it. And when he did City of Ruins, that was pretty late in the show. Were you expecting Night Shift to just have been dropped completely?
I didn't know what to think at that point, because, and it's funny, I think I said to you earlier today, if someone was watching me in the crowd, they were like, is Hal bored? Why is he checking his watch? No, Hal looked at his watch at several points because I couldn't believe how long the show was running. When Night Shift started, I had totally forgotten about it, for one thing, because it was so like the old days where stuff was coming rapid fire. He was calling songs out, taking signs. I had just slipped my mind. And then when it started, I was like, wait a second, we still have to get to Last Man Standing and all that stuff. The main set wound up running about a half an hour longer. And that's really where the extra length to the show was. Twist and Shout added a little bit extra, but the main set was incredibly long. By the time the main set ended, it was about 2.5 hours, maybe plus, into the show. Most of the other shows are pretty much in 10th Avenue or at most Dancing in the Dark at that point. I couldn't believe that he was able to do that, for one thing. Again, not to harp on his age, but, you know, we all, I think we all live with the basic laws of nature. And at 75, you're supposed to be slowing down somewhat compared to your younger days. And that didn't seem to be the case last night.
All right, now I'm going to throw it back to Mick and an allusion that you made to me over 8 years ago now, and also in the great city of Los Angeles, where you went. He played three nights, the 15th, 17th, and 19th of March in 2016 on the River Tour. And you said to me after the March 15th show that you were bored. You felt like maybe this was it.
Yes.
He didn't have it anymore. But then he came out two nights later, and he blew you away. Are we thinking that this could be a very similar kind of situation?
I certainly thought San Diego was like that. And based on the reports in San Francisco, there is no question the tour has gone up a level that, in all honesty, I don't think that you and I were really expecting to happen at this point.
That's true. I did not expect it to be this level at all this year.
But that is different than what we saw last night. What we saw in San Diego and to a lesser extent in Vegas was definitely on a higher level than most of the stuff I saw last year. I mean, obviously, MetLife 3 was another very special night. But taking that out of the equation, going back to like UBS that you mentioned, much higher level. But last night went way beyond that. And I don't know if it's as much of a turning point. I think we've hit a turning point. I don't know if we can cite last night as a turning point, and we'll have to see what happens moving forward. I just can't believe, I mean, do you, that he could play 3 hours plus every night, even with 2 days off in between?
Yeah, I'm not expecting a three-hour plus show every night for the rest of 24. But I wonder if the kind of energy, and more importantly, the kind of the set list surprises may become a regular thing. I think that's the bigger question. I mean, if he played a 2.5 hour show, but you had songs like the ones he played last night, Boom Boom Tougher, Fire, Jolie Blonde, hey, that'll work for me.
Well, and you bring up an interesting point, because there was one other thing on the set list last night that really caught everyone's attention, although it wound up getting skipped. On the written set list, it said, Because of Night, I'm on Fire, She's the One. So you're still going to do Because of Night and She's the One, but he had I'm on Fire in between, which would have been the first time I think the second half of the show has been altered at all. And I think that provides some hope that there is even going to be some changes perhaps to that section.
That would be nice, but it's interesting because I don't see that working in between there, despite the fact that I would like to see him change up Because of Night and She's the One, and Wrecking Ball for that matter. The segue from Because of Night to She's the One is always magnificent. He just crashes right into She's the One. And without that segue, I don't know how that was going to work. I felt like the pacing was just really weird. Now, if he had done I'm on Fire, say, after She's the One, or maybe even before Because the Night.
That's where I would put it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been great, but it just was such odd placement between those two total rockers that I don't know how the pacing would have felt.
And it was very evident during the show, because at the end of Because the Night, he ran around, we could read his lips saying, She's the One, She's the One, and we were like, why? I mean, sometimes he does that for show, but this really seemed to be like he was notifying the band, and that's why he was notifying them. There was a different song on the set list. Yeah, the one other thing I'm noticing while looking at the set list, it does say V2, which I believe means it was the second version he created last night. Now, we'll never know what was on the first version. I had texted you right before the show, because we saw them taking the set list up and putting new ones down. And I was like, oh, no, because I thought maybe he had decided to not do some of the stuff that had been soundchecked and maybe that had been on the set list. And he was like, okay, pull that up. We're going to do something else. But maybe he actually went more adventurous with the second version of the set list, having seen what's on version two.
Well, that would be nice. I just hope he didn't decide to go safer, and maybe he had more changes on version one. But
well, that's what I'm saying. I think based on what was written here, I'm going to guess that version two was more adventurous than version one. I have no evidence of that, but with all the stuff that was in here, I mean, because if he had played the set list as written last night, we still would have been talking.
Yeah, we just would have not had Jolie Blonde on it. I think that's the only change. Oh, and No Surrender.
Yeah. And Twist and Shout. There were three songs not on the set list played: Twist and Shout, No Surrender, and Jolie Blonde, as you pointed out, and I'm on Fire was removed.
Right. So I think he's put together a hell of a set list and then a hell of a show. I hope you get something almost approaching it, if not equaling it or surpassing it on Sunday night.
Well, the energy that he had in the encores last night, Land of Hope and Dreams, was great. It was the first time I was seeing it on this tour. I love the People Get Ready ending. And as I mentioned, the frenzy that was going on when he went into Twist and Shout. Another thing to point out about Twist and Shout, he pulled a woman on stage by the name of Melissa, and it came out of nowhere. And of course, she's the only person who's really been on the stage, at least by his invite. There was that incident in Newark where he motioned to a girl who thought he was saying to come on stage, and he was like, no, 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 and sent her back down really quickly. But Melissa was on stage for several minutes dancing with him, and that's the first time that's happened as well.
Yes, yes, it is. And we all assume last year was because of the COVID concerns. And so I don't know if maybe that'll be a turning point as well. I just hope we don't get 15 people on stage for Dancing in the Dark like we've been known to get, yeah. You know, 8, 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Melissa was entertaining, so nothing against her. But yes, I would agree at this point, just keep the stage for the band, which is, I believe, something he said in 1988.
It is exactly what he said. Everything should be in moderation. And yeah, of course, also in 88, he said he wanted to come out and sing a new song. That was his job. And we've kind of questioned that a few times over the years.
Oh, boy. What a show, though. I mean, my brother said to me, he's like, it's unbelievable that you could sound this excited about a show when you've seen so many shows. And I guess there is some truth to that. But I really had a feeling last night. I was so locked in. It's like something you really don't expect to see again. And this is no way being critical of him. This is just insane that this took place. So you have to reasonably expect that a man who's a performer, I mean, we've seen athletes, obviously their skills degrade as their careers go on. 75 to think that he's going to play like he's 50. It really, and out of nowhere. So it just amazing, amazing night.
Well, let's hope it continues. I mean, I really want to see a show now after how excited you were. So we'll have to see what happens with tickets for a couple of shows here in the Northeast.
I mean, before we wrap up, what do you think? Do you think that this is a turning point? He can't sustain that. You would agree night after night after night for through November 22nd. That just seems...
It does seem a little far-fetched, but I think the fact that the energy he did have, and he seemed to be enjoying playing, and that he was out there putting all his heart and soul into it and doing something different, showing some spontaneity, I think that's what I'm looking at to hopefully continue and to be a turning point in that way. I think there were several times last year where we kind of felt that he was going out there. I don't want to say mailing it in, but he was certainly not. He wasn't there as much as we had seen him in 2016 or 2017. And so people were wondering, you know, is he just here for the paycheck? And from based on last night and what's been happening over the last few weeks, I say no, he is still getting such an adrenaline boost out of playing and performing. And I hope that continues. And I really do think that a big weight has been lifted off his shoulders, as I've said before, after his health concerns from last year. I think he had mentioned in one of the interviews, and I think you with Rotolo, I think you mentioned it as well, that he was afraid he was never going to be able to sing again, that there were some points where the doctors did not guarantee him that he could sing again. And so he saw that it was possible he could lose it. And so now he's going out and grasping every minute of it.
Yeah, I never thought he was there for the paycheck, but certainly last year was a struggle, as we've discussed many times. And now that he's fully healthy, it just shows he really is a remarkable physical specimen. It's just crazy. I don't think we'll see the level that we saw last night, certainly regularly. That seems improbable. But I am now really, really looking forward to seeing what takes place Sunday night and beyond.
Oh, absolutely. I think, do you think we can say Bruce is back? The Bruce that we knew for 99 to 17 is fully back? I would like to say he is.
Yeah. Look, obviously the impact of the illness last year was a lot greater than anyone in terms of the fan base understood. And maybe even he didn't understand how much it was having an impact on him until it got to the point where he had to stop, you know, because, and we've heard this before, people, you know, they're like, we want to push through. And then suddenly, which is basically what he said to Rotolo after MetLife 3, he was like, that's it. There's no more pushing through. I have to stop now. And look, we've seen a lot of shows over a long period of time now. And it is a tremendous joy for me that I can still summon the feelings myself. It's like my brother was saying, that I could be in that building last night and that the show could make me feel this way is A, why we're doing the podcast, but B, it's just, it's very special, and he's the best. There's just nothing else to say about it.
Well, let's hope you feel the same way after Sunday.
I'm going into it with reasonable expectations. I'm not going to be sitting there going, he's going to try and top that, like he's going to play 3.5 hours. I am hoping Patty is there, because first of all, I'd really like to hear Human Touch. And also, I thought she added something really wonderful to last night's show. But we'll see what happens from there. I don't know if it's reasonable to expect that Patty's going to play any shows outside of LA. We had talked about it, that she might pop up here because they have a base here and they have their friends here. And so it made sense and just added a lot to the show.
That's what it sounds like. And I hope she's there Sunday as well. And from there, he comes back to the East Coast. He has 4 shows after that, after Sunday. And then it's off to Europe.
As I said, it's going to be very interesting to see how things go from here. So we'll wrap things up now. I'm going to try and get some rest, because I did not sleep much last night at all. I was so wired. As you said, it's fully back.
All right. We'll go get some sleep and enjoy Sunday, as I said.
Yeah. And of course, we'll be back with a report on Sunday and the other shows. None But the Brave is presented by Evergreen Podcast, produced by Bull Market Entertainment. Please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/MBTB Podcast, and on Twitter, or X if you prefer, we are at MBTB Podcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.